Hey, hey, Heat Nation! Welcome back to Heaters Gonna Heat. I'm your host, Kyle Russell, here to chat a little about our favorite NBA team, Miami Heat. A bit of a ho-hum 2-2 week for the Heat has them pretty much right back in the same spot that they were at this time last week. So since they're kind of circling the same spot, I'm going to take the middle segment today and just zoom out and just talk big picture where I think this Heat team is just over the course of are they done with the Jimmy era and ready to move on to the Bam era kind of thing. Still got the games as usual to recap. And then for the last segment, as usual, we'll look ahead towards another week as Miami tries to climb out of the play-in tournament and at least snag that sixth spot and a guaranteed week off before the playoffs start. But first, we go back to last week's games. Miami, again, 2-2 in the last week, brings their overall record 39-32. Still quite haven't hit 40 yet. We're close. Very close. And we start last Monday at the Philadelphia 76ers, a game that the Heat lost 91-98. So for the injury report to start out this game and just for the week as well, Hero and Love would continue to be out all week. But to make this game a little bit worse, the Heat would also be without Jimmy Butler and Nikola Jovic. So to recap of the game itself, in place of Jimmy Butler, Jaime Jaquez would start, and then in place of Nikola Jovic, Haywood Highsmith would start. It seems predictable move. That is typically what's been happening throughout this season, right? Highsmith, more of a bench, out-of-rotation player, comes in to fill for the power forward spot, and then Jaime's been filling in for Jimmy all season long at this point. Recap for the game itself. It's pretty much like a game of quarters. Most of the quarters went heavily towards one team or the other. First quarter, tightly contested, tied at 21, but the Sixers pulled away in the last minute or so to go up 8 over the Heat. So bad close to the quarter there. Second quarter, the Heat did start an 8-0 run that would tie it, the lead going back and forth throughout the second. But the Heat were down 2 after a buzzer-beating shot by Kelly Oubre of the Sixers. Third quarter itself, Miami came out just ice cold to start, falling quickly behind 17 early in the third quarter, and only managing to scrape it to 14 by the start of the fourth. And then, crazily enough, Heat mounted a furious comeback, tying the game at 85. But from there, the Heat would only score 6 points for the remainder of the way, while the Sixers would score 13, a lot of it powered by Kyle Lowry, who got his revenge against the Miami Heat, helping Philly pull away and get the win for the Sixers at the Heat's expense. Player of the game for this one, this is what I ask no one, because it was not a great game by just about anybody on the Heat side. I guess I give it to Bam Adebayo in the end. 20 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists on 8-10 from the field, 2-2 from 3-point range, 2-2 from the free throw line. A good stat line overall, sure, but 4 turnovers and 0 field goal attempts in the fourth quarter. And yes, a little bit of that is for sure the Heat not doing a good job of getting Bam attempts, but a little bit I think was also like Bam not necessarily enforcing himself in a game where like, hey, he had 20 points in the first 3 quarters and produced nothing in the fourth. So that's why I say like it's kind of hard to just definitively give Bam this. But end of the day, I still give him the credit for making 2 3-pointers, one in the corner, one above the break, and just trying to continue that trend. Interesting stats for this game. Miami lost is primarily off of the turnovers, losing that 15-12, and then points off of turnovers 14-19. And then after that, just real difficult time scoring inside, especially considering the Sixers were without Embiid. They end up tying points in the paint, 38-38. And then the last part, the Sixers just edging the Heat out on field goal percentage. Miami, 35-89, good for 39%, to the Sixers, 37-85, good for 44%. So close game overall, just, you know, a few things just didn't go Miami's way, and that ultimately made the difference. And then to mention real quick, Terry Rozier, also a potential player of the game here, came on strong late with 10 points in the fourth quarter to finish with 20 points, but on a really inefficient night, 8-21 for the field, so that's why I ultimately dinged him there and went with Bam, at least continuing the 3-point trend. And then Duncan Robinson would also exit this game in the third quarter with a back injury that would keep him out the rest of the game and then also out for the rest of this week, and we'll get to him later on as well. Really sucks that the injuries are kind of mounting up right at this pivotal time. But That finishes up the game against the Sixers. We move on to the game last Wednesday against the Cleveland Cavaliers, a game Miami barely won 107-104. And like I mentioned already, Duncan Robinson would be out for the rest of the week, so he would also start with this game against the Cavs. Jimmy and Jovic would be back, but Bam Adebayo would sit that Wednesday game. Everything I heard was that it was just kind of a rest thing. He would be back by Friday, so it's not like it would keep him out very long. And really just gave him a few days, you know, near the end of March just to kind of rest up a little bit. So ultimately, you know, great game that they were able to get the win. And then it must also be said for the Cavs side of things, they would be without three of their starters in Max Strus, Evan Mobley, and Donovan Mitchell. So, recap for the game itself. Thomas Bryant would start in place of Bam Adebayo. I think that trend is now holding where it looks like Bryant, whether that's because he has a potential contract coming up in the summer or just because he's legitimately outplaying Orlando Robinson, Bryant seems to be the third center in line, still behind Kevin Love and behind Bam Adebayo, certainly. But we see right here, right? Both those players are out. Who does Spo call upon? He calls upon Thomas Bryant. The game itself, after some back and forth, the Heat built a 10-point lead. In the first quarter, that would evaporate in a rain of threes. The Heat only up one after the first. But they would extend their lead on it with a 7-0 run to start the second. But similarly to the first quarter, they held on to that run until late on where they collapsed, their lead going from about double digits to only four at half. Third quarter saw some bigger swings from runs from both teams, but ultimately the Heat ended up closing the quarter, this time closing the third quarter strongly, to be up eight going into the fourth. And then middle of the fourth quarter itself, Miami just coughed up the lead on a 7-0 run. All the momentum is swinging the Cavaliers' way. It looks like this is going to end up being a loss for the Heat. But then Terry Rozier stepped up, scored 9 points in the last minute and a half. He had a 4-point play and then another like nasty 3-pointer that managed to drop. But Terry Rozier's 9 points helps get Miami the win, come from behind. Just all the scary Terry memes going crazy last Wednesday night. And player of the game, got to give it right back to him. Terry Rozier, 24 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists with 1 block, only 2 turnovers. Though not his best assist night, but still I like that he's keeping turnovers very limited. But did so on a not bad efficiency, 8-16 from the field. Really great from 3, though, 5-6 from 3-point range. 3-3 from the free throw line. 11 of his 24 points in the fourth quarter, including those big shots down the stretch, to pretty much steal that game right out from under the Cavs. Interesting stats from this game. Again, close games like this, you're going to see a lot of the stats that are going to be very similar, and you're pretty much just looking for, like, where does a team get an edge from their identity? And one of the Heat's identities all season long has been winning the turnover battle, and that showed up here. Miami winning turnovers 7-11, and points off of turnovers 18-14. Despite no Bam Adebayo, they also managed to tie the Cavaliers at 37 rebounds as well. So a great effort on the glass. They got to their identity with the turnovers, and they were able to limit Cleveland's identity on the glass. And ultimately that, you know, again, gave the Heat the edge. And then honorable mentions before getting out of this game. Jimmy Butler had a great case for player of the game. Ultimately, I gave it to Rozier for the late shot making. But Jimmy Butler, 30 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals on 11-19 from the field. And did have a big bucket. Like, while Terry was going off for those 9 points in the last, like, minute and a half of the game, Jimmy did, like, sandwich a really tough, crucial bucket that I think gave the Heat, like, a 2-point edge or tied the game at the time, something along those lines. But really important, and wanted to give Jimmy his credit. And then Thomas Bryant, 6 points, 10 rebounds, so at least got double-digit rebounds. And is really hustling against Jared Allen on the Cavaliers. That also stood out to me from that game, and again, being a big factor towards that win. Moving on, and hopefully the last two games won't be as long to go over just because there are blowouts, well, in both directions. We start first, Miami returning for a homestand, hosting the New Orleans Pelicans last Friday, a game that they lost 88-111. Looking at the injury report, Bam would be back, and nobody would go out. So, hey, Heat taking us a small step towards being healthy here. But recap for the game itself, Heat surged out the gate up 14-2. I actually forgot that they were at one point up double digits in this game. But everything flipped from there when the bench came in. Pelicans were able to take a 1-point lead after the first. Early in the second quarter, the Pels jumped up 11 points, though the Heat would chip away the rest of the way of the second quarter, only being down 4 going into the half. So again, you feel like this was a winnable game. And then the second half just completely flipped with the Pelicans going to zone defense. Early third, Pelicans again jumped out to a 12-point lead, but Miami couldn't close because they could not score against the zone defense. They could not get a three-pointer to drop at all. And we're down 10 points going into the fourth quarter. And then early in the fourth quarter, the Pelicans got up 20 points. They were able to hold that lead until about 4 minutes left when the Heat would wave the white flag, and that would be the game there. Player of the game continues a trend where, like, I'm not entirely sure who should be player of the game. That's actually going to be all week, I guess. This one I gave to Cole Swider, which, if you don't know who Cole Swider is, he is essentially in the same mold as, like, Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero. He is a movement shooter that the Heat have on a two-way contract. So, with Robinson out, when Hero out, they brought Swider up. At least, hey, let's bring out a three-point shooting threat. And he was able to be somewhat effective. 14 points, 2 rebounds, on 5 of 7 from the field, 4 of 6 from 3-point range. Kind of spaced out. He went 2 of 3 in the first half, 2 of 3 in the second half from 3-point range. That was about the best that he got from their team that night. Looking at stats, this pretty much boils down to just this. The Heat lost field goal percentage going 31-86, good for a frigid 36% from the field. Just a little bit over a third. To the Pelicans, 42 of 82, good for 51%. So 15% difference in field goal shooting. And then to make it even worse, the Heat went from 3-point range, 13 of 47, good for 28%. And I would imagine a lot of that came in the fourth quarter when it was more so garbage time. It was early on, they could not get a 3-pointer to drop. But 28% to the Pelicans, 18 of 36, good for 50%. It was really a night that you missed. Like, Swider did a fair job, 4-6 from 3-point range. But you really missed Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson this game. But, yeah, just think about that for a moment, right? The Heat made less 3-pointers on more 3-point attempts than the Pelicans. Tells you a lot about how the game was going to go just from that. And then the mention real quick, no one for the Heat broke 20 points. In a game where they played 13 players because of garbage time and injuries and all that stuff. Oh, and then to make it even more embarrassing, the Pelicans were also on the second night of a back-to-back. So, yeah, let's just forget about that Pelicans game. Let's move on, talk about the one that we really want to talk about. Yesterday's game against the Cleveland Cavaliers, a game that the Heat won 121-84. So getting to return a little bit of the pain and exercise some frustration from Friday night against this Cavs team. Looking at the injury report, Jaime Jaquez was a late scratch for the Heat. He did warm up, but then ultimately decided not to play, so I don't think that's going to be too much of a long-term thing. The Cavs would still be without Donovan Mitchell and Max Strus, but would get back Evan Mobley that game, though he would not be very impactful. Though, again, you know, maybe you could say rust or whatever, I guess. Or maybe you could just say Bam Adebayo shutting them down. recap for the game, Heat got out to a good lead up 14-5, and then held that advantage for once when the Cavs got going later on in the first quarter, Heat up 10 after the first. Then in the second, they just kept piling on, playing great defense, scoring well, Heat ended up being up 21 at the half. And yes, huge, huge lead, but if you've been watching this team this season, you know they can blow that lead, so if you weren't just resting on it yet. But in the third quarter, the lead did grow to 30 early on, got as high as 40 in the third. So by that point, all right, okay, but now we're just legitimately blowing them out, as long as we just don't screw around too much. It would settle to 33 going into the fourth quarter, but the fourth quarter itself was, for the most part, just garbage time. The Heat got as high as up 45 before coasting to the finish. I think they emptied the benches with, like, 5 or 6 minutes left, something along those lines. So, in the end, a great statement win for the Heat after an embarrassing loss Friday. Like, the kind of bounce back that shows some pride. Like, hey, no. Like, we still have some pride after that whooping we took Friday night. Player of the game for this, I gave to Haywood Highsmith. 18 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal on 7 of 10 from the field, 4 of 4 from 3-point range. Really playing his 3-and-D role perfectly when he has that 3-point shot going. And he ended up leading the Heat in scoring with 18. Yes, another game where nobody for the Heat scored 20 points, but hey, way different feeling this time around. Stats for this game, again, in a blowout like this, it's kind of your pick. But focusing on what changed from Friday to here, Heat won field goal percentage battle, 43-83, good for 52%, to the Cavs, 30-72, good for 42%. So Miami getting the big field goal percentage swing this time around. And then the tried and true, one turnover battle, 9-17, and points off of turnovers, a dominating 35-11, just punishing the Cavaliers every time they turn over the ball. Honorable mention for this, like I mentioned, nobody scored 20-plus points. Feels very different. Also, Bam Adebayo, really solid game, 15 points, 16 rebounds, 3 assists, 5 steals. So really bringing the defensive effort. Did attempt a 3-pointer, but didn't make it. So I guess the streak isn't going, but hey, at least he's still attempting it, and that's all that I'm here for, at least one attempt a game. So with this, zooming out, Miami got arguably their most dominant win of the season, again, up as much as 45 points, and then I think I saw it was the most dominant win since a 42-point win we had against Milwaukee back in the 2020 to 2021 season, something like that. It's been a few years since we've won by this high a margin. So that part's good, but it's still just a 2-2 week. The Heat don't drop any, but they don't also gain any, and they're just kind of stuck where they're at, which is currently a play-in spot. So with the Heat effectively in a holding pattern over the last week, I wanted to zag from all the micro talk about, like, oh, well, if the Heat win this next game and then if Philly loses tonight, then that means that the Heat will be in the sixth seed tomorrow. No, like, we still got a few weeks left. So these things can still change frequently over the next few weeks. We'll get a clearer picture probably by next episode or two. Instead, I want to go from the micro and then focus on the macro and ask the question of, could this be the last year of the Jimmy Butler era in Miami? And before I get too inflammatory with that question off the first, I do want to specify what I mean by that is primarily as Jimmy Butler being like the presumptive finals MVP. If the Heat were to win a championship. So to back up real quick, I essentially have a theory that it goes along the lines of, like, if I'm constructing a team, the first thing I care about is who is my finals MVP. And then I worry about everything else after. So before Jimmy Butler, Miami did not have a player that you could say, like, yeah, I could see that person winning finals MVP. And for being honest, or maybe more so myself, if I'm being honest, even when Jimmy Butler first came to Miami, I did not see him as a finals MVP level player. It was not until the playoffs when he stepped things up several gears that it was like, oh, wait, this is actually a finals MVP level player. We are in a legit era, the Jimmy Butler era, where we have a chance to win a title because of this guy. So that's more specifically what I'm asking, right? Are the Heat nearing the end of this era where Jimmy Butler could be the best player on a title winning team? And does need to be said, looking back in retrospect, this has still been a wildly successful era for any team, regardless of yes, they did not win the championship, but if you could tell a team, like, hey, you're not going to win a championship, but you are going to get to 2 finals and 3 conference finals, they're taking that. Everybody's taking that. But it does need to be highlighted that most of the success for the Heat have come specifically in the postseason. And the regular seasons have not been great. The Heat only had 1 year where they actually had a legitimately great regular season, which is the first year of Kyle Lowry, 2021 to 2022, where they ended up being the first seed in the East. Every other year, though, has been a struggle. Arguably the second most impressive year of the Jimmy era comes back the first year, 2019 to 2020, where they finished with the 5th seed en route to going to the finals. But even then, if you go back and look at it, the Heat were not playing well, you know, late February, early March. Then we had a pandemic happen in 2020, and I don't know if you remember that. But that essentially allowed the Heat to reset, better incorporate the new pieces they had gotten at the trade deadline, and then close the start of the bubble to get them up to the 5th seed. Out of that, this has been the reality, has been trying to get out of the play-in. 2020 to 2021, they scrape by and manage to get to 6 before they get swept in the first round by the Bucks. Last year, they ended up not able to get out of the play-in. They fall to 7th, eventually go down to 8, and then we have the crazy run against the Bucks. This year, right same space. So there is a little bit of hope, I guess, in that regard, because the pattern is that this team struggles in the regular season, usually, outside of the first seed year, and then they really explode in the playoffs. But that's just not a continual recipe for success. Even if it is predictable, it's just not, I don't think it's sustainable because of the amount of stress that it puts on the organization through these Februaries and Marches when you're trying to fight out of just getting to a play-in spot. So, did want to say, Jimmy Era, very successful. Not necessarily over yet, because he will still get his chance to show it in the playoffs. But this has been a very concerning year for Jimmy Butler. First, he's age 34. Second, all the years he spent playing with Tibbs and the track record of players that play long periods of time with Tom Thibodeau having shortened careers. We saw it with Lou Alding in the mid-2010s as well. And then just what our eyes are telling us as well when we watch these games and we see, you know, we'll see Jimmy Butler be super engaged and the world-eater Jimmy Butler scoring 36, 38 points in a game. And then a week or two later on, he's got like 15 points and the Heat got beat by 10 or something like that and in an embarrassing fashion. And it's just like, hold on, this is... Yes, we get the ramp up. Yes, we get November, December, even January, just trying to get through it. But it's supposed to ramp up through February, March. And it started to ramp up, and then it started to sputter. And then it started to ramp up a little more, and then sputter a little again. And it's like, it's deviating, which is going to bring up all the other concerns about age and everything else. So at least for the regular season, Jimmy Butler does not seem to be that, like, reliable, top-level option for the Heat. If he's going to, definitely so if he's just going to coast so that he can conserve it for the playoffs. So then we obviously start looking at the other options, and then the first one has to be Bam Adebayo. And something else has been going on that I've been thinking about through these last few years has also been how the Heat have been trying to find a balance between having a Jimmy Butler who was in his early 30s, ready to compete now, and Bam Adebayo, who started this era in his early 20s and still coming into his powers. You don't necessarily know exactly what you have in him, but then he has been blossoming and adding to his offensive game, and again, most recently starting to shoot threes. And so it's been the balance of like, all right, we have our best player is older, our second best player is much younger. Can we try to, you know, not necessarily lean so much into Jimmy that if it doesn't work out, that we don't have anything to put towards Bam, and he ends up wasting a few years of his prime. That's why, like, for example, I think the Heat have been really particular about holding on to Tyler Hero because of the possibility of, hey, if Jimmy ages out, well, then Tyler could play alongside Bam in, like, a two-man game. You know, however much you think of that as a possibility aside, that seems to be the thinking as I see it. But to Bam Adebayo's credit, he has continued to add stuff. He's added the three-point game. He's 26 years old. He's entering his prime. He's already Defensive Player of the Year level. Regardless of how much attention from the national media he gets for it, we as Heat fans that watch the game know this dude is one of the best defenders. So one end of the court, top of the elite. And then on the other end, with the additions of shooting threes, with all the playmaking he can have, with a lot of his versatility on the offensive end, he looks like he just, again, just scratch and get that reliable three-point option. I think Bam could legitimately take over as the number one option for this team. At very least for the regular season, if not also into the playoffs. So perhaps the more expanded version of the question that I posed at the beginning of this segment would be something along the lines of, like, could this be the last year of the Jimmy era and the beginning of the Bam era? And I think to a certain extent, that decision was made for the Heat last summer, which brings us back to the Damian Lillard trade saga, sadly. Because you look at that, and that screams a move that was made more so for the Jimmy era. Like, hey, we're going to go get this super elite offensive option. He's definitely older and more in line with Jimmy, and we'll be ride them out, maybe get a title or two out of it. And that will also be sufficient for Bam, such that if we have to rebuild after moving on from Jimmy and Dame, then, well, hey, Bam, we already got you a title or two. You'll be good for a year or two while we retool around you. And towards that, that line of thinking that it was more for the Jimmy era. You look at the, yes, this is all reported. Like, we don't know what was for certain put on the table for it, again, because Portland and Miami never had talks. But all the talks were like, hey, the Heat would include Tyler Hero. They would include Jaquez. They would include Jovic or Martin. A lot of these younger pieces that would fit more in Bam's timeline to be sacrificed for something that would go into Jimmy's timeline. But ultimately, the Portland Trail Blazers went a different direction, and Miami wasn't able to make that play for Jimmy's timeline. And what they were left with was the pieces that fit more with Bam's timeline, which is why I think over the course of this season, you're seeing them put more into Jaquez. Well, Jaquez, to his credit, actually just more took it onto himself. He played great, and he definitely is a shining young piece for the Heat. And then Nikola Jovic, who looks like a potential front court partner for Bam Adebayo, and has been coming on, you know, most recently. Now he's a starter. His defense has really improved. The offense looks like it fits. It plays well alongside Bam. And now we have a second young tantalizing piece as a result of not making that Dame trade last summer. So that's where I say, right, like that's a sliding doors moment. If the Heat do end up making that Dame trade, then it's definitely still all in on the Jimmy era. But since that decision was made for them, it almost forced the Heat to tilt more towards the Bam timeline. And then another interesting point alongside of this is the addition of Terry Rozier, who I think was a really great just stopgap measure. So you trade Kyle Lowry, bring in Terry Rozier. Terry's 29 years old. He's right in the middle between where Bam is at and where Jimmy is at. So he can both help the Jimmy timeline in the now, and then also help the Bam timeline for the next, like, 2 years or so. Though 29, actually, I guess he does tilt a little bit more towards Bam in age. But that is to say, like, you look at this, the makeup of this team, and it has subtly shifted younger. The oldest players in the rotation right now are 34-year-old Jimmy Butler, 35-year-old Kevin Love. Everybody else, well, Josh Richardson's injured right now. Everybody else, I believe, is under 30 in the rotation then. That sounds more like a Bam team than a Jimmy team. And I don't think that's going to shift any more towards an older Jimmy timeline in the future. So I guess if I go back to the original question, could this be the end of the Jimmy era? Yes. Yes, it very well could be. And that isn't to say that Jimmy couldn't win a ring with the Heat. I do still see, or that he would even leave the Heat or get traded from the Heat or anything of that sort. I could still see a situation where the he stays in Miami, not as the number one guy, but like, hey, Bam, you're now the number one guy. I back you up, and then I will just find my moments where I can go off. I think he could settle in that role. And essentially win a ring, kind of like how Alonzo Mourning won a ring with the Heat, right? Alonzo Mourning used to be the guy for the Heat. He did have the unfortunate kidney disease issue, but he came back at a later point in his career when he couldn't be the number one guy but still be an impact player and played a huge role in Miami eventually winning that 2006 finals. I think Jimmy Butler could have a role like that. Though, ultimately, and as I close this segment out, it's still going to come down to the playoffs and what happens these playoffs, whether or not this is the definitive end to the Jimmy era. Because the pattern's always there. Jimmy coasts for the regular season, and he just goes off in the playoffs. He writes a big check in the regular season and cashes it with interest in the playoffs. This year, the regular season, he has definitely wrote his biggest check. And then we'll be able to see if he can pay it come playoff time. Otherwise, that might be Jimmy's last chance to be the best player on a title-winning team. Now, let's switch from that and look ahead to the next week of Heat basketball as we look to get out of here. Looking at the injury report for the Heat, Jaquez, like I mentioned earlier, did warm up for the game Sunday, but ultimately didn't play. He is only listed day-to-day. I hope he's not out too much longer. Just, yeah, get him some good rest. Duncan Robinson and Kevin Love have been listed out on a game-by-game basis at this point, which makes me think that they're not too far away. They could be back even this week. Even some of the news regarding Duncan, like the diagnosis for Duncan did not sound great. It sounded like essentially inflammation of like his lower back that causes a lot of pain. But the word is that he's handling it pretty well, and it's primarily just pain management. So it's at least something he can play through, for lack of something better. Kevin Love has not getting any update. Again, just listed out game on game. I just hope he's back soon. And then Tyler Hero, for sure, out this week. He will be reevaluated later on to see when he could potentially make a return. I mean, we're at this point, we have 3 weeks of the regular season left, so if he's going to come back and shake off the rust, he doesn't have much time. Looking at the standings now, a little bit of bad news in that the gap has widened between 5th and 6th. 5th, I think, is currently the Knicks. It's either the Knicks or the Magic. They've been flip-flopping a little bit. And then Cleveland in the 3rd seed has been slipping. Miami helped contribute to give them 2 losses last week, but they were like 3-7 in their last 10, something along those lines. Essentially, just to say the Cavs have been slipping at the worst time of the year. So there could even be a situation now where 3 could fall, like the Knicks or the Magic could climb as high as 3rd. So we'll see how that develops over the next few weeks. The Heat themselves are still at 7th in the mix with the Pacers and Sixers in that 6-8 range. Obviously, Heat want to get to 6. That's the last playoff spot. Only a half game separates these 3 teams. And not this week, but next week is going to be a huge week for Miami because they will play both the Sixers and the Pacers. But a little bit more on that next week as we get closer to it. The good news for the Heat, at least, is that there is now a 5-game gap. I think it was like 4.5 last week. It widened a little bit, the 5-game gap between 8th-place Sixers and 9th-place Bulls. So not much risk of falling any farther below than 8th, almost certainly at this point. Again, higher chance that the Heat get up to potentially even 3rd than it is for them to fall to 9th at this point. And for the games this week, Miami will finish up a 4-game homestand. Then they have a 1-game road trip over the weekend. First of the homestand starts tomorrow hosting the Golden State Warriors. This is a Warriors team that has a 36-34 overall record, currently 10th in the West. Heat are up 1-0 after a late December win against the Western Conference team. Look at the injury report for the Warriors. Nobody listed injured, so that's at least very good for them. Players to watch out for. Number one is obviously going to be Steph Curry. I think he's the only player averaging 20-plus points for the Warriors at this point. I mean, the 3-point shooting god. So defending him is a full team effort. That'll be fun to see. To lesser degrees, Kuminga, who's been a very athletic forward for them, really great on the defensive end as well. Draymond Green always makes a defensive impact and a playmaking impact. But again, in terms of like a scoring threat, it's primarily just Steph Curry and, well, to a lesser degree, Klay Thompson off the bench as well. Looking at the stats for the Warriors, they're 11th in offensive rating, 18th in defensive rating, 11th in pace. Things that they do well, as you'd imagine for a team with the Splash Bros, 3rd in field goal attempts overall, 2nd in 3-point attempts per game, while being 9th in 3-point percentage. So it's good. The big thing for Miami is going to be closing down the threes. And then they're also 1st in total rebounds, which a little bit interesting, but they got a decent amount of size with Draymond and Kuminga up front. And their 4th in assists makes sense for just the way that this team moves the ball around. Draymond playmakes, Steph playmakes. They also got Chris Paul coming off the bench who playmakes. Things that the Warriors do badly, though. 19th in 2-point attempts, well, 17th in 2-point percentage. So if you can shut off what they got going on from 3-point range, they're not making up for it inside. And then they're 22nd in opponent free throw attempts while being 22nd in personal fouls. So that plays into Miami liking to get to the line a little bit more. Then 23rd in turnovers and 23rd in opponent turnovers. So that's the turnover battle should be something Miami wins. And then lastly, a lot of bad stuff for them. 26th in opponent 3-point attempts. So if Miami can get anything going from 3, which may be difficult considering they're likely still without Hero and Duncan. But if they can get anything going from 3, then that could swing things well in their favor. And then storyline for this game. Last time the Heat had a late March game against the Warriors was back in 2022, where Jimmy and Spo almost fight each other, and the national media had their little chuckles at the thought that would tear the Heat apart. Little did they know that would actually just galvanize the Heat instead, and ultimately they would get the first seed after that. So maybe we get something dramatic this time around that helps galvanize the Heat and help them get the 6th seed to get out of the play-in. I'd be down for that. So after that, the Heat will finish off their homestand this Friday hosting the Portland Trail Blazers. This is a Blazers team that currently has a 19-52 overall record, 14th in the West. Heat are up 1-0 after a win in late February. I was at the Magic game that night. Yeah, and then I was fortunate. It came back. The Heat ended up winning in the fourth quarter of that game. Looking at the injury report for the Blazers, they have lots. And I'll be honest, this is a team that 14th in the West at this point of the year. It's probably stealth tanking. They have done it in years past. It was one of the things that irritated Damian Lillard, how they would shut him down at the end of last season. But that is to say, right, like, they could have a lot of players out. Players that could be there, that could be impactful against the Heats, maybe Scoot Henderson. I do know Shaedon Sharpe is on G League assignment, so he won't play. Anfernee Simons is day-to-day. He's probably their biggest threat. So if he does play, Anfernee Simons, actually. and then Jeremy Grant has been a really great forward for them. Though he has also been, like, Anfernee Simons been out recently, so don't even know if he's going to play. But let's be honest. There should not be any major players on this team that the Heat should rightfully fear. Looking at the stats for the Blazers, 28th in offensive rating, 23rd in defensive rating, 21st in pace. For things that they do well, 6th in opponent three-point attempts, while 5th in opponent three-point percentage. They do a really good job of limiting threes. And then they're 5th in opponent turnovers while being 6th in steals. So they do a good job of just poking the ball out and getting turnovers off of that. So two good things on the defensive end to worry about. That's about it. Look at bad. 16th in field goal attempts, while 29th in field goal percentage. The offense is just garbage. 28th in turnovers and 28th in opponent steals. The Heat should have an easy time winning the turnover battle, getting into the passing lanes. Jimmy and Bam have been really great about that recently. 16th in opponent two-point attempts, while 30th in opponent two-point percentage. So if Miami can get inside, Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler is really great at that. Terry Rozier as well, actually, with his speed, also getting inside. They should be able to carve the Blazers up close to the rim. And then storyline for this game, I mean, for Heat Twitter, they need the season sweep against the Blazers after all the drama that went last summer. They got the first win, which is good, but I know they're going to want the sweep. In general, though, it doesn't get any easier than a Blazers team with nothing to play for but lottery balls. So the storyline for this is, hey, Miami Heat, you got another one of these easy wins in front of you. Can you just eat it? Which segues well to the last game on the week for the Heat. Very, little bit of a similar situation. This Sunday, the one that game to go on the road at Washington Wizards. This is a Wizards team that has a 13-15 overall record. Heat up 2-1, though, after an embarrassing loss last time. I think that is the worst loss of the season. Again, this is a Wizards team that has 13 wins, 58 losses, but one of those 13 wins is against this Miami Heat team. Looking at the injury report for the Wizards, very similar to the Blazers, lots of names on there. Yeah, makes sense for a team. Oh, I didn't even put what they're at. I think they're like 14th or 15th in the East. They're so far down there. Yeah, they just want the season over with. Players to watch out for. Kyle Kuzma hurt the Heat last time with a 30 ball. And then Kispert killed them from three as well. So I guess you watch out for the two players that really hurt you last game. Stats to watch for the Wizards. They're 26th in offensive rating, 29th in defensive rating, but first in pace. So one of the things that they do have going for them is that they have a game where things are starting to swing in their favor. They're playing at a fast enough pace that you know, it essentially just adds enough randomness that something beneficial could happen for them. Things that the Wizards are good at. They're 8th in assists, 4th in field goal attempts, 6th in opponent turnovers. That's about it. I guess maybe the way that I string that together is they try to get turnovers off the opponent, share the ball well, and then just jack up a lot of shots and hope that they go in. That's about it. Bad, 29th in opponent field goal attempts, well, 30th in opponent field goal percentage. Their defense is awful. I'm actually surprised that they're 29th, not 30th. Themselves, though, they are 15th in three-point attempts, well, 28th in three-point percentage. So they take a fair amount of threes. They do not convert them really well. But if you have a game like what happened against Miami, that was part of the formula. They got the ball passing around well, had a ton of assists, which is a strength of theirs. The three-point shooting went down. So what is a weakness became a strength. And that was some of the big factors that played into them getting that win last time that the Heat need to taper down this time. Storyline for this game, Heat screwed around last time and found out and let the Wizards steal one as a result. Can they avoid that same mistake this time around? Just get the easy win, right? The Warriors is the hardest team on the schedule, but if they get that Warriors game, and there's a really good chance that they get the Blazers and Wizards game, the Heat could be on a legit four-game win streak this time next week. And then everything feels so much better, and they're probably out of play-in at that point. So after the Wizards, though, the Heat return for a homestand against the Knicks the following Tuesday, but we'll go into that then. And then next week as well, as we get just a little bit more closer to the playoffs, might have a better idea of some potential opponents for the Heat in the first round. So maybe that's what we'll talk about next week, or maybe something crazy will happen, and that'll take precedent instead. I don't know quite just yet, so tune in next week. But for now, I do thank you for hanging around. That'll be all for this episode. Please, if you can, follow the pod at Heaters Heating and myself at KBR Heat Culture. Also, check out the other great pods we have at OTG Basketball off of X Twitter, Celtics Lab, Full Access Pacers, Brooklyn Buzz. They're always doing great work over there. Links for everything are in the show notes as usual. I'll be back next week. So until then, hope you all have a great one, Heat Nation.